This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in for Joshua Johnson today. The National Rifle Association has for a long time been respected and feared as a behemoth in conservative politics. It poured more than $55 million into lobbying during this last 2016 election, or the presidential election. That's 19 times the amount spent by groups promoting gun control. But the NRA's latest battle is against itself. On the second day of the NRA's annual conference, Oliver North announced that he had, in effect, been ousted as the NRA's president. North's statement was read aloud to the organization members by NRA Vice President Richard Childress on Saturday.
There is a clear crisis. It needs to be dealt with immediately and responsibly, so the NRA can continue to focus on protecting our Second Amendment.
Now, this is only the latest potential scandal to rock the NRA. The organization is under investigation in several jurisdictions and is dealing with the fallout from Maria Butina, who last week was sentenced for using the NRA to infiltrate and influence Republicans on behalf of Russia. Here to talk about the turmoil at the NRA is Betsy Woodruff. She covers politics for The Daily Beast. She's been following this story closely. Betsy, it's great to see you. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
So there is a lot going on here. We have a lot of layers of this story. People will remember Oliver North, famous or infamous for his role in the Iran-Contra scandal during President Ronald Reagan's second term. He's now president of the NRA. So what is going on with Ollie North and the NRA?
It's a complicated story. So to take a step back, the first thing you need to understand is that there are two camps within the NRA. On one side, of course, you have Ollie North and then an advertising firm called Ackerman McQueen. Ackerman McQueen has been working with the NRA literally for decades. It's almost hard to say where the NRA stops and Ackerman McQueen begins. So that's vaguely one cohort. The other cohort, of course, is run by Wayne LaPierre. He is the head of the NRA. He's the guy who's in charge of its day-to-day management. While Ollie North's title is president, it's mostly generally a symbolic role. Wayne LaPierre is the guy who really runs the organization, and he's been working with a lawyer from Dallas named Bill Brewer. Brewer runs a firm that's been representing the NRA as it goes through a number of legal arm wrestling matches over the last year or two. Now, what we know is that Ollie North threatened to send a letter to the board of the NRA detailing allegations of financial misconduct. According to Wayne LaPierre, in a letter that he sent to the board in an effort to preempt it, Ollie North told him through an intermediary that if Wayne LaPierre didn't step down from his role running the NRA, North would present these very troubling allegations he characterized as troubling, to the board, and it would cause all sorts of problems for Wayne LaPierre. So Wayne moved to preempt this. This happened a couple of days ago, and the result was that he essentially forced North out. So North is not going to be running for re-election as president of the NRA. He is no longer a powerful figure there. Over the past several weeks, there's essentially been a death match between LaPierre and Ollie North, and now we know that LaPierre is the one who won. Both of these men, both of these camps, bring allegations against each other of financial misconduct. It's hard to say who in which camp is a reliable narrator, but what everyone agrees on is that the NRA's money is being mismanaged in a really egregious way.
Well, this kind of thing in big organizations tends not to happen when times are good, when everybody's happy and things are going the way the organization wants it to in every way. If Ackerman McQueen has been intermingled with the NRA for so very long, the question is, why now? Why is this now a problem between these two camps of this big, powerful organization?
You'd probably get a different answer to that question depending on who in which camp you talk to. Of course, the NRA is having its annual meeting in Indianapolis, Indiana. It started over the weekend. Today, as we speak, the NRA board is convening and talking about how to handle these very issues. One thing that we can point to as sort of the most clear, concrete layout or indicators of the tension is a lawsuit that Wayne LaPierre and the NRA filed against Ackerman McQueen. They filed that lawsuit in Virginia State Court a couple weeks ago, and then just a few days ago, they updated it to include more specific allegations about Ollie North's relationship with Ackerman McQueen. In that lawsuit, essentially what they say is that Ackerman McQueen is withholding information from them about the way Ackerman McQueen handled the work that it did for the NRA and about the way that Ackerman McQueen spent and then billed the money the NRA gave it. Ackerman McQueen, of course, manages NRA TV, which I imagine many people are familiar with. It creates programming that ranges from sort of gun-focused content about, people talking about the different types of guns they like, the different type of ammunition, sort of, the nerdy stuff that gun fans are into, all the way to the very incendiary end of the culture wars, issues that have nothing to do with guns, but rather touch on sort of social conservative hotspots. A point that was a flashpoint was when Dana Lash did a segment of her show about, what are they called? The choo-choo trains?
Oh, Thomas the Tank Engine.
She did a segment about Thomas the Tank Engine complaining that it had been co-opted by the politically correct agenda. And a graphic that she used was pictures of these Thomas the Tank Engine characters wearing KKK hoods. This was something that a number of NRA donors and board members thought was totally bonkers. They went to the NRA and said, what on earth are we doing? What does this have to do with the Second Amendment? How does this help our agenda? That was an important moment in sort of this broader flashpoint about how is the NRA spending its money? How is Ackerman McQueen relating to the NRA's mission? And it's just a piece of the turmoil that's been roiling the group for quite some time.
And this is only part of the story, because while all of this is going on with the NRA based in Virginia and their meeting was in Indianapolis, they're also under investigation in the state of New York, where the New York Attorney General Letitia James announced this weekend that she's opened an investigation into the NRA's tax-exempt status. Why is she doing that? What's the basis for that, and why now?
So the NRA is headquartered in New York, which means that they are based in, of course, the jurisdiction of that state.
But they have a big, giant headquarters in Northern Virginia.
They do. They have a big building in Northern Virginia where a lot of their work gets run out of. But from a corporate perspective...
Oh, chartered.
They're chartered in New York. So they are square in James's jurisdiction. Now, when James was campaigning to be New York Attorney General, she talked about going after the NRA. New York, of course, is the bluest of blue states, and the NRA doesn't have a lot of popular support there. So politically, it's a smart thing to do. In James' favor, though, when it comes to starting this investigation, is the fact that very senior people in the NRA are making allegations that would suggest the group is not complying with the laws that govern nonprofits in New York. Essentially, LaPierre and Ollie North have made it pretty easy for James to say that she's starting an investigation for serious law enforcement purposes rather than purely as an effort to win political points.
But what... In terms of the spending and their tax-exempt status, what is the real concern about the money?
Depends on who you talk to.
Uh-huh.
What everybody agrees on is that the money is being mismanaged. What we also know is that the NRA's fundraising has taken a nosedive under the Trump administration. Whenever Republicans and people who support expansive gun rights are in power, the NRA just doesn't make as much money as it would, for instance, under a Democratic administration. But then the other question is the NRA handling its money properly? Are people misusing it? Are they billing it in proper ways, or are they mischaracterizing their expenses when they bill the NRA? Those are some of the issues that have come up in this litigation that we've looked at. And my understanding is that the details of the financial problems facing the NRA, which actually have yet to be laid out in sort of a credible, exhaustive, on-the-record manner by any of the people with firsthand knowledge, my understanding is that those details are actually going to be worse than we currently believe them to be, just based on, anonymously sourced characterizations of letters, and then the vague allegations laid out by North, by LaPierre, and then in the litigation in Virginia.
Well, you mentioned their fundraising is down. I mentioned the axiom that fights like this tend not to happen when times are good. I will give a word to the NRA's outside counsel, who said in a statement about this investigation in New York, the NRA is prepared for this and has full confidence in its accounting practices and its commitment to good governance. What is the overall financial state of the NRA now, Betsy. People are used to hearing about this financial juggernaut that can raise so much money that it does whatever it wants.
It's finance. It's fundraising has taken a nosedive under the Trump administration. I believe the number is upwards of $50 million is how much less they raised than the year prior, now that Trump is in office. And then in addition to that, of course, there are all sorts of expenses associated with the NRA TV programming, which is costly to produce. There are expenses associated with complying with the legal investigations that are going on of the NRA. The Senate Intelligence Committee has had a pretty wide, robust investigation of the NRA's interaction with Maria Butina as part of its larger and still ongoing investigation of Russian efforts to influence the 2016 presidential election. Dealing with investigations like that can cost a lot of money. It just gets really expensive. And one allegation that the Ollie North camp makes is that Bill Brewer has been charging the NRA too much for his legal services. Of course, the response from Brewer is, and this is, of course, a paraphrase, but you all are really in need of some legal services. And if you want a good firm, it's not going to come on the cheap.
Still, we talk about an organization whose fundraising is way down. I issued a statistic at the top of this show. $55 million pumped into the 2016 election does not sound like an organization that's in financial straits. But we'll tease some of those numbers and some of the influence apart just after we take a short break. And I want to talk about Maria Butina as well, because she's just been sentenced to 18 months. President Trump tweeted this morning about this very issue. He said the NRA is under siege by Cuomo and the New York State AG, who are illegally using the state's legal apparatus to take down and destroy this very important organization and others. It must get its act together quickly, stop the internal fighting, and get back to greatness fast. That's what the president has to say about the current turmoil at the NRA. We want to hear from you as well. You can always tweet us at 1A. I'm talking about the NRA, their financial straits, and their latest legal battles with Betsy Woodruff of The Daily Beast. I'm Todd Zwillick in for Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. Welcome back to 1A. It's Todd Zwillick in for Joshua Johnson today. We're talking about the latest financial and political turmoil at the National Rifle Association. Betsy Woodruff is with me in the studio. She's politics reporter for The Daily Beast. She's been on the NRA story. And we're going to move from this story in just a few minutes. So get your questions in now. You can comment on our Facebook page. You can always tweet us at 1A. The email address, 1A at WAMU.org. Bruce emails, I was a member of the NRA in the 50s when the organization's focus was on gun safety, but no more. The NRA's obsession with the Second Amendment began in 1977 when Harlan Carter became executive vice president and ginned up anti-gun control hysteria to increase membership and political influence. It worked. That's what Bruce has to say. Betsy, you mentioned Maria Butina just before the break, a piece of news from just last week, who was just sentenced to 18 months. She gets credit for time served after pleading guilty essentially to serving as a Russian agent and using the NRA to gain access to conservative Republicans. That seems to have been her strategy there. How much of a difference has this made to the organization, given all of their other problems?
It has basically poured gasoline on the internal fires within the organization. Of course, this is something that seriously damaged its reputation. It gave ample fodder to the NRA's already energized critics, who say that this is another part of sort of the unsavory work that the NRA has done to try to influence American politics. The NRA, of course, has defended itself robustly. My understanding is they are cooperating widely with the Senate Intelligence Committee. They've shared a ton of materials with that committee. And I don't have any knowledge of the NRA being the target of any federal investigation. So some of the allegations that you perhaps have been floating around sort of in the Twitter sphere, we don't have direct knowledge of those, of some of the most incendiary claims right. being true. In the case of Maria Butina, however, what there's no dispute about is that she was able to build relationships with some of the most senior, powerful people in the NRA and then use those relationships to connect them with very powerful people in the Russian government. In December of 2015, she helped arrange a trip for some of the NRA's top leaders to Moscow. While they were there, they met with a member of Vladimir Vladimir Putin's National Security Council. They met with Sergei Lavrov, who's the very powerful Russian foreign minister. They had a ton of access to these Kremlin figures, who often are quite stingy when it comes to meeting with their counterparts in the American government. The fact that that trip happened and that she was able to set it up indicates that, or suggests very strongly, that she wasn't just an ordinary gun rights activist, but rather, we know for sure, she had access to some of the most powerful people in the Kremlin.
Now, and there was clearly a lot of substance to that investigation of Maria Butina, and she has pled guilty and been sentenced. But you mentioned another round of allegations as well. And Melvin tweets, I hope you'll discuss the reported connection between Wayne LaPierre and Russian operatives. Now, you talked about part of that, but you mentioned something else. There was plenty of reporting, and some of it innuendo, around the Mueller investigation, that the millions of dollars pouring into the NRA might have sources in Russia, and that the NRA might be a conduit for Russian money influencing American politics or the election or the inauguration. There were a lot of what ifs and maybes. You just said you're not aware of the NRA being a target in any way when it comes to those allegations.
That's correct. If those allegations are true, then that's egregious criminal activity, and that's something that would be well within the jurisdiction of the Department of Justice to investigate. I've seen no evidence that the DOJ is investigating the NRA for acting as a conduit of Russian money. What we do know is that the Senate Intelligence Committee is scrutinizing the NRA very closely. What we also know is that Mueller's team had sort of at least one brief limited conversation with Maria Butina. But in addition to that, there's not a discussion of the NRA or of Butina in the Mueller report. So even though it's something that would have been within his purview for investigating Russian efforts to meddle in 2016, it isn't something that he scrutinized in any especially detailed manner.
And what about her boyfriend, the Republican operative whose name escapes me?
Paul Erickson,
who's apparently been cooperating to a great degree. Is that right?
Paul Erickson is a longtime Republican gadfly, quasi-insider. He was on the board of the American Conservative Union for a time. That's the organization that hosts the very influential CPAC conference that all the Republican powerful politicians speak at. Erickson has been indicted in South Dakota, again by the Justice Department, for a number of financial crimes. The allegations they've brought against him thus far do not involve Russia. What I can tell you is that several months ago, I reviewed a copy of a target letter that the D.C. U.S. attorney sent to Paul Erickson's lawyer. And in that letter, the D.C. U.S. attorney wrote that they were considering charging him with acting as an agent of a foreign government, the same charge that they brought against Maria Butina. Of course, a target letter doesn't mean charges will be brought. And thus far, the D.C. U.S. attorney's office hasn't charged Erickson with any crime connected to the Russian government.
So let's take a step back for the couple of minutes we have left, Betsy, because it's a little hard to get your head around just how big of a problem this is for the NRA, right? On the one hand, infighting, power struggles, fundraising way down, investigations that have at the very least embarrassed the organization and thrown gasoline on the fire, as you said. But I bring us back to that number, $55 million poured into 2016. $55 million doesn't sound like an organization that's struggling and gasping for air.
But let's remember the timeline. They were spending that money during the Obama administration, when gun rights activists were deeply concerned that Hillary Clinton would become president and that she would use her perch in the White House to go after some of the more expansive laws permitting people to own guns that are more powerful than many Democrats believe people should have access to. It was a totally different moment in time back in 2016 than it is now that Trump is president. Now that Trump's president, the NRA has had to deal with the entire Russia fiasco. They've seen their fundraising numbers drop. My colleague Lachlan Marquet reported towards the end of 2018 that in the first year of Trump's presidency, the NRA raised about $55 million less than it had in the year before. $55 million is a lot of money. And for an organization, even an organization this powerful, seeing that money just kind of vaporize is challenging. This has happened to the NRA before, of course. When Republicans are in power, they just don't raise as much money as they do when Democrats are in power. But coupling that, coupling the fact that their members don't feel the urgency to support their gun rights activism with all these self-inflicted problems, the bitter and internal fighting, the Moscow problem, the Maria Butina story that has dogged the NRA for more than a year now. All of that has come together and caused significant turmoil in the organization. And the really interesting thing about this is that the wounds the NRA now faces are basically entirely self-inflicted. Democratic members of Congress, Democratic activists, groups like Everytown have been working from the outside for years, you know, in a way that's organized and energetic to try to limit the influence of the NRA. Perhaps the irony is that the NRA has become its own worst enemy.
Well, what would it mean, just before I let you go, Betsy, for the NRA to lose its tax-exempt status if that's what happened as a result of the New York investigations? Is that existential? Is that a threat?
It's an existential threat, absolutely.
What would it mean?
It would mean that people who donate money to the NRA don't get the tax write-offs that help. It would also mean that everything would cost more, that the NRA would have to pay taxes on the money that it brought in. For an organization that, you know, currently doesn't have the most sound financial footing that they would want to have, losing that access would be, or losing that privilege would be, a huge problem.
Betsy Woodruff on the inside of the story, the turmoil at the National Rifle Association. Betsy covers politics for the Daily Beast. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for coming in.
Sure thing.